you go. Just take a lively companion wherever you go. Take a portable radio. Take a portable radio.
Radio Stuff Show, episode 81. Hi there, I'm Larry Gifford, radio consultant and talent coach at LarryGifford.com. Coming up in this episode...
I will do whatever I have to do to earn a living.
What about qualifications, anything like that, that might mean you're better...
I've got a degree in broadcasting communications. Well, you know, that's as good as a chocolate teapot, I guess. But
well, that's true.
So I have a degree.
You know, you can walk down the street naked and... If you're not doing it in an intersection and holding up traffic, then no one's going to pay attention.
If somebody decides they want a nude sunbathe in their backyard, we have no business flying a drone over their backyard and capturing images of that and sharing it with people because your backyard is private.
This is a weekly show about radio for radio. You can find all 81 episodes at RadioStuffPodcast.com. We're on SoundCloud and Stitcher and iTunes and TuneIn and wherever you download your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at The Radio Stuff. Our top story, Rock Wars. This is a story about how to steal market position from a heritage radio station. In Los Angeles, KLOS has been the mainstay rock and now classic rock station since the mid-1980s when it stole the rock moniker from KMET. The KMET had become old and predictable and stale, and now... KLOS is the dinosaur, and 100.3 The Sound is LA's new home for classic rock. Now, this week, The Sound made a huge announcement. Huge! Mark Thompson from the legendary KLOS morning team, Mark and Brian, is going to take over Morning Drive in February. Now, November's Nielsen ratings, 12 plus, showed The Sound as the ninth ranked radio station in the entire LA market. KLOS had dropped to 18th. At one time, they were number one. Now, how'd they do it? Well, I wanted to find out. So I knocked on the door of The Sound and asked to talk with program director Dave Beezing.
Hello.
Welcome to the Radio Stuff Podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here. Nice to have you here.
It's good to be here. Now, my intention for this gathering was initially to just sort of pick your brain a little bit, but I'd be remiss if I didn't jump right into Mark in the Morning.
Yes.
You had a big announcement this week.
You scheduled this, to your credit, you scheduled this appointment before we had the big announcement.
The entire staff of The Sound have been assembled, and they don't know why. And Peter and Dave are going to tell them that I am going to be the new morning show for The Sound. Dave asked me over the weekend if I would shoot a short video on my iPad and send it to him, because after they tell them, they're going to play this for the staff.
Good afternoon, everybody. Mark Thompson here. I have to assume that Peter and Dave just told you. And I hope you're excited because you people have done something remarkable. You have built a white hot radio station. Top to bottom, the best. Joe Benson has done a great job with the morning show. But Peter and Dave want to put an entertainment-based morning show. And it just so happens, I know how to do that. People in the morning, they want one thing. They want content. Provocative, entertaining, topical, original content presented consistently by live bodies sitting in a room with a microphone. And that's all they really want. They don't want a lot of clutter. This that I just described has always worked and it always will. So what I want all of you to do is to absorb the information you've been given. And I want you to go home and I want you to have a really great Christmas. I want you to overdrink and overeat. But you need to get rested, because next year, you and I are going to hold hands, and we're going to make a sound in the Los Angeles market. And do you know what that sound is? It's the sound of winning. There is an entertainment storm coming to LA, and an umbrella ain't gonna help you. Get fired up and get ready, because I'm coming.
Maybe you knew something was coming. But Mark Thompson, formerly of Mark and Brian, is back on the radio starting in February. He'll be hosting our morning program, morning show here. We're building a cast for that includes Andy Chanley, who has been our midday host here and been doing the news on our morning show all along. Joe Benson, Uncle Joe, as he's well known, been in this market for, well, since the early Mark and Brian days, and they go back that far. Joe is moving to middays, and he will start each show with the 10 at 10. We see that feature as being really compatible with Joe, and we're excited that Joe will take over the nostalgia feature on the station, 10 at 10. He's well suited for that. He's got great stories about all that music.
Hey, Uncle Joe, tell us a story.
A storybook story.
Here's the story.
Jimmy Page Week, featuring him and Led Zeppelin off the record this Sunday night at 8. Extensive conversations. Thought you would enjoy this one. There's a song in particular that he's well known to have written and produced. In fact, he didn't just make a demo. He recorded an entire guitar orchestra. And when he took it into the band, it was at that point called The Overture, and they started working on lyrics. And along the way, it was called The Campaign for a while. By the time it was done, it was actually Song Remains the Same.
Originally, it was going to be an instrumental, but it got to the point where it became a song, you know, with lyrics and vocal and that. When I was doing the guitar overdubs for what was going to be the lead parts, I thought, well, I'm going to do this the whole way through. And pretty much in the style of what I was originally going to do with it. So, you can hear the guitars on it, and you can hear it as a guitar instrumental now with more extended passages, if you like, of the sixth. It's interesting because, I mean, I knew what I was doing at the time very, very well. I was clearly focused. Mm-hmm. And you can hear that there's parts of these leads which go in on the final version as a song with a vocal. But you can see I'm just flying all the way through these things.
And that's what he was known for, flying. The song remains the same, and that's the story.
Julie Slater remains 3 to 7. Wonderful Rita Wild, 7 to midnight. We have Cynthia Fox, Mimi Chen, lots of familiar voices on the weekends, and we keep on cooking here, but with Mark.
So how big of a deal is it to get Mark Thompson?
You tell me. I mean, I hope it's a big deal. We've certainly worked long and hard on it. The reaction has been phenomenal. I think we're at a point with Mark where, I hope, all the planets are aligning in a good way. He's been gone. He and Brian have been gone 2.5 years from morning radio. And that's just long enough that people haven't forgotten them, and in fact, probably at the peak of really missing them. You know, the absence makes the heart grow fonder, as they say, and there appear to be a lot of people who still have not quite found that morning show, the morning conversation and personality that they really enjoyed all those years with Mark and Brian. So we hope that that's the case. The other thing that I think is perfect is that Mark has something to prove. He worked all those years with Brian, and they did such great radio together. There was such a tremendous rapport. But the last few years, I'm not speaking for Mark when I say this, and I've never even met Brian. What a brilliant, funny man he is. But I think their visions may have started to differ as to what the future of the show might be. Mark really wants to prove what he can do and really wants to be successful on his own. He has the energy and the drive and the ambition that he had when he had just started in the business.
So when you're looking for talent for your radio station, whether it's morning drive or middays or afternoon or evenings, what do you look for in a talent for a classic rock station?
Well, for this classic rock station especially, somebody that's authentic. I want them to know the music, but I want them to be just great people, you know, who are very relatable, understand the audience, and are fun people to hang out with. It should be somebody that you'd want to sit around and have a beer with and listen to that same music in person with. And we have that crew, and a lot of them bring a lot of credibility because they've been doing rock music and classic rock in some form.
Before it was classic rock, they were playing these songs.
Exactly. They can say, I remember that tour. I remember when they came in the station to promote that single. They go back a long ways. And the audience has long-standing relationships with all of these people, Cynthia Fox, Rita Wild, Joe Benson, and Mark. And so we have their old friends here at the Sound. The people, the local DJs that they associate with this music are here. They're really talented folks, and they've really adapted well to the times. They're not stuck in the past at all. They know how to do a great radio show for 2015, so we're thrilled to have them.
Was it always your intention to target the KLOS talent?
No.
Or that, because a lot of the, what, five or four or five?
Yes. We had to really, there was a point there where we had to really ask ourselves, are we going to create the perception that we are just a KLOS clone? You know, and I suppose for some people out there, we have created that perception. But it's happened gradually over the years, and I think our core audience understands how we're different. We've certainly pointed that out on the air. We're not shy about that, and we name names. So
what do you say about that?
We count their music, how many songs they play compared to us, and we also count their commercials, how many commercials they play. And they literally run 1,000 more commercials in a week or more than we do. It's 47%, I think, last week. 47% more commercials on Black Friday. I looked just Black Friday to Black Friday. The day after Thanksgiving, they had 75% more commercials than we did.
And the award for Classic Rock Station of the Year goes to 100.3 The Sound in Los Angeles.
Wow. Unbelievable. Whew, good thing the producers gave me a seat near the stage. I'd like to thank the readers of Classic Rock Magazine, and thank you to our listeners. You're amazing. And thank you to the ad salespeople at KLOS. All those commercials you run really helped. You're an inspiration.
So what's the number today?
79.
Did you check that?
79.
The Sound Music Challenge daily results are in. Yesterday, the Sound played 79 more songs than KLOS. We care about music here at 100.3 The Sound, and we're glad you do, too.
So, while it can be tacky, I suppose, to some people, for us to point that out, we think that's an important difference, that it's too important to just let it be. We think that it's something that people care about. And most of the feedback we've gotten about our campaign and pointing that out has been positive, from people saying, wow, I didn't realize that there was such a difference. Mm-hmm. And, of course, comparative advertising, whether it's the Pepsi Challenge or any ad we could find in the LA Times today comparing the price of a Toyota to a Mazda or whatever, comparative advertising is all around us. And when the aspect of the products that's being compared is an important one, then it's valid.
And because they were first in market, are they still seen as the market leader?
It's a good question. It probably depends on who you ask. In Nielsen, it's been us this year, but heritage is a difficult thing to overcome in perception. I do think that something clicked right about the time Mark and Brian left KLOS. Rita was gone at that point. Jim Ladd was already gone at that point. Jim's now at SiriusXM. Cynthia Fox was gone, I believe, at that point, or did she leave later? But several of the key folks had already left the station. But when Mark and Brian left, I think that's when a lot of folks who really don't keep score on the day-to-day of radio looked up and said, wait a minute, the call letters are still KLOS, but I don't think I know anybody that's on that radio station anymore. These are not the people I grew up with. I have no idea who they are that's talking to me here. So when that happened, I think Mark and Brian was the turning point when people realized. And then their replacement show has a following and has not done poorly. They've had some pretty good ratings, and they're talented folks, but they do target a different audience than Mark and Brian did. And I think that was partly by design, but it left a lot of folks out in the cold.
This is Rita Wild. You know, there's no place like home for the holidays. And for me, the sound feels like home. I hope it does for you too. Season's greetings from everyone here at 100.3 The Sound, Southern California's classic rock.
Bells will be ringing.
So, think about the brands that you, I mean, you are the brand manager of The Sound. Do we, you know, based on what you just said, do we put too much credit to the brand of the radio station and not enough credit to the personality brands?
In this market, we probably do. I think that's probably true to some degree in every market, but I got to tell you, it's been an eye-opener for me since I've been back at the station, at a single radio station, working again as a program director. I did something else in the business for many years, for a while there. But when I got back at this station, that was a lesson that I learned pretty quickly, because this staff that I first put together, we didn't have a lot of those heritage folks available at that point, and we weren't going to go out and get a Mark or a Brian or a Mark and Brian, and we put it together just based on talented people who we knew would do a fantastic job and be great to work with. We had a no assholes policy, and we've stuck to that to this day.
So what year was that when you started?
That was 2008.
What was the mission for the radio station back there? What was your goal?
Well, we were a different format to begin with.
Okay.
We were a AAA radio station, and we were able to take this brand name and morph it into more of a classic rock situation. We went through a stage there where we called it album rock and marketed that, and there are still some aspects of that to the radio station in that we have kind of that 70s early FM rock feel to the radio station more so than most. We're a more traditional classic rock station to this day than most stations out there. It has that look and feel. A friend of mine was in the market recently and told me, "I feel like I've walked onto the set of the movie FM." it does have that feel. Our goal, honestly, initially when the company set this up, the goals were very modest. We were still in diary methodology, as far as Nielsen or Arbitron at the time ratings were concerned. And it was a billion dollar annual market in LA for advertising. So if we could get a two share, we thought we'll make plenty of money, we'll do just fine, and we'll have a really eclectic, fun radio station that plays some new music and some old music and has the artists coming through here and performing for us, and we'll be fine. It'll be great.
And did you have fun?
Oh yeah, we did, but the methodology did not support. When diary changed to PPM, we were starting actually the last diary book that counted. We were starting to get just a little bit of lift, and we were starting to break through, and then PPM hit. And PPM has, it's no secret, has not been kind to several formats, music formats that existed previously, and one of those being AAA. Some of these AAA stations around the country are still doing very well, but a lot of them have morphed into other things. I think Minneapolis is really an adult contemporary station now, and they've all had to become much more hit-based radio stations and tighten their playlists and play to the meters and play to the... So that happened, and then the economy crashed, too.
Yeah.
So a two-share was harder to get for a AAA radio station, and a two-share was not a license to print money once the economy crashed. So we adjusted, and we were able to take this brand and do some other things with it.
It's
been fun.
Unique, though, because usually people would swap out their brand. If they're going to change their format, they would suddenly you'd be Q101.
Right, sure. We didn't. We didn't want to relaunch. It's very expensive to launch in Los Angeles. It's very expensive to get anybody to notice you at all here, and it's very difficult. You know, you can walk down the street naked, and if you don't cause, if you're not doing it in an intersection and holding up traffic, then no one's going to pay attention.
So, what year was it that you switched to classic rock?
Good question. Because it was kind of a gradual thing.
Oh, you pulled a fast one on the listener.
We pulled a slow one. we did a slow morph. We had always played a lot of depth in the gold, but the current music went away in about, I'd say, 2010.
Okay.
Yeah. Early 2010.
And then once you had sort of gotten the station where, okay, now we're classic rock, mm-hmm. What was your goal at that point?
Well, we were still flanking for a while. We were still in a flanker marketing position vis-a-vis KLOS and other stations because there wasn't what appeared to be a great opportunity to take the leadership position. So we were trying to do it with more depth, more variety, longer playlist, things that you really shouldn't try to do in PPM, but it was what was available to us. And do it in a way that showed the audience that we really do care about the music, mm-hmm. and we do. And the features remain, and we still have more depth and more variety than probably any other classic rock station in the U.S. That ethic has remained. But we've now become, we went on offense in marketing warfare terms. And decided we were going to claim the classic rock hill.
It's the best day of the week, Triple Play Thursday.
KSWDFM and HD1, Los Angeles and Orange County.
Southern California's classic rock.
The album rock, as we positioned it, started to dry up. We had created that flanker category, and it started to dry up a little bit. About a year and a half ago, we figured it would at some point. The thing about depth with music, and a lot of experienced radio programmers know this going in, it's difficult to maintain a difference that way long term, because everybody's idea of what depth tracks you should play is different.
Oh yeah,
and for 6 months, a year, whatever it is, the people who want depth and want a station to really go deep into the albums all the time, not just on special features, they really dig it and they really do appreciate it. But after a while, they start to go, yeah, but you didn't go in depth on the albums that I like. And you're not, come to think of it, my iPod is better than you. The community iPod is never as good as one's own iPod.
So how do you pick music today? How do you decide, how do you craft your playlist?
It's really an ongoing day-to-day thing where the DJs have a lot of input and we all work on it together. I do look at a lot of data and that helps to advise us on things, including PPM-related data. I think there's a tendency to think that if you watch the PPM data, it's going to drive you completely narrow and tight and predictable. But we like to use that PPM data to look for the nuggets that stand out. And you'll find, if you really watch your scores from Nielsen, and we subscribe to media monitors, if you watch your scores, you'll find some gems that work really well, at least for a while, and then you can switch it out with some other gems and see which ones work and keep your playlist fresh. An example being a song like If You Want to Get to Heaven by Ozark Mountain Daredevils.
If you want to get to heaven, you got
not a big song in classic rock in 2014. But we play it quite a bit because people go, oh, that song with the harmonica and the foot stomping harmonica song with the, you know, it kind of sounds like a Southern Fleetwood Mac song.
So you're still discovering new music even though you're the classic rock format.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool. It's really cool. And we do have that audience that is open to new music and will give us a chance to take some chances.
You told me something before we started this interview that excited me and surprised me. And that was that your goal, personally, is to have the most well-written radio station in the country.
Yes.
What's that mean to you?
Every break, every promo, every sweeper, I want it to be really well-written, really thought out, well-crafted, and not predictable.
Wowza, that's from 1982. Hey, Andy Chanley here. You want to hear my body talk? Trust me, you don't. I'll tell you what, let's go back to 1982 and play 10 songs that aren't that one on the Sounds 10 at 10.
So, and sometimes that may mean a variation like putting the call letters, putting the brand name at the front of the sweeper, and then telling a little story about the artist or the song, something that is that fits in a 10-second sweeper, 15 seconds, okay. And but you're able to tell that story and go right into the song because you've done the branding at the front instead of at the end. Or it's, we have both a male and a female voice, and they're both fantastic, Rob Naughton and Sherry Donovan. On a commercial-free sweeper, having the male voice say commercial-free and the female voice say 100.3 The Sound, putting the 100.3 with the commercial-free because they rhyme and going commercial-free, 100.3 The Sound. Just playing with it, playing with audio, playing with sound, and writing it so that it is always a fresh experience every time you put on the station.
How much do you write?
Almost all of it.
And how much time does that take out of your week?
Haven't put a stopwatch to it, but a lot. It's what I probably, that and programming the logs, I do more of that than I do coaching the talent. Writing. And the talent has learned that it's expected of them too, that when they go into a break, it should certainly sound spontaneous, but they need to really think it out and approach it as freshly as possible.
How integrated into social media is the sound?
Very. Our Facebook is always humming. We've really embraced it. I'm proud of that. Our staff seems to understand that it is not just another transmitter. It's not just a one-directional way of transmitting more content to people. It's a way to have a conversation with folks, and they do a beautiful job of that. And they've really learned a lot from social media about what works on those platforms and how those platforms differ. But also, there's lessons to be learned if you watch the statistics online. There are lessons to be learned about how to tease things on the radio and how to write on the radio. Because you can see that if you wrote the tease one way, you get more click-throughs on Facebook than if you do it another way. And they've applied some of those things to getting people to listen another 5 minutes as well. Especially with, I'd say, on our morning show with Joe and with his producer, Mike Sherry, when they post about the comedians, they have a feature called Laughter at 45 After. And they've learned from writing teases for the Facebook posts, or captions, I should say, that writing it a certain way gets you a lot more click-throughs than another way. And a lot of it is the old 80-20 rule. In this case, you know, give people about 80% of it and just hold back on the punchline or the last 20%. Yeah. A lot of radio folks think it's the other way. Of, as you know, their tendency is, you know, be mysterious and tell them you've got something coming up about Hillary Clinton, instead of saying almost everything you've got about Hillary Clinton except the big payoff.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Okay. And what's the contest I hear about in the office about social media?
There's a rivalry. There's a friendly rivalry. I think Sam Peasley now has the record for most viewed post on Facebook, and it's up around 15 million.
15 million.
Yeah.
So you're doing something right.
Yeah, it's for some reason, and there is a window of opportunity now for your listeners that are in the business. I think there's a window of opportunity right now with social media to get on the board and be a source of conversation with people, and that window is going to be closing more and more, and it's going to become more and more difficult to be a new kid on the block in social media. I really do. And so I'm really proud that we've gotten in there with the right philosophy about social media, and the way those algorithms work, no one knows for sure, but it appears to be that because our content is shared and commented on and liked and so forth a lot, the algorithms favor our content over and over and over again, and we're in business.
What are you most proud of?
Oh boy, this whole conversation has been flattering, that you're asking so many great questions and of me, so thank you. What I'm most proud of is people. When I get this week with the Mark Thompson announcement, a lot of folks that I've worked with in the past have resurfaced and sent little notes of encouragement and congratulations. And it's really gratifying to hear from somebody that you worked with 20 years ago, mm-hmm. Who says, you're somebody who matters to me. I'll always remember working with you, and I feel the same about them. So, you know, at the end of it all, I've been around long enough to know that we won't look back at the ratings and the revenue. We'll look back at the people. And what I'm most proud of is that there are a lot of people out there that I can call friends.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Larry.
And congratulations.
Good to see you. All right. Take care.
Everybody's voting for the friendly voice of radio, the people's choice. East Coast, West Coast, in between, it's radio that makes the scene.
Here's one of my radio stuff updates. Last week, we told you about Alpha Media's plans and desires to use drones for breaking news coverage on Portland Talker KXL. Lars Larson is a talk host on from noon to 3 Pacific in advance of his nationally syndicated program 3 to 6. Lars just inked a new 5-year deal with Alpha, and he joins us on the Radio Stuff podcast. Lars, congratulations on the new contract.
Thanks very much. I'm glad I'm going to be around for a few more years.
I think your listeners are too. When were you first made aware of the idea that KXL was thinking about using drones and breaking news coverage?
About 10 days ago, when my boss walked in and said, hey, we're going to have a drone. And I said, well, we have to make sure we're doing that in compliance with federal laws. And he said, of course. But I've looked forward to this for a long time. When drones first came about and when the prices dropped dramatically and they offered a camera platform that could give you an eye in the sky, in effect, I thought they were going to be a tremendous both news-gathering tool and promotional tool. I think that when I worked in television, the thing you wanted most was to be able to give, on certain stories, people a view of subjects from the air, because there are things you can see or understand by seeing an aerial picture that you simply can't get from being on the ground.
Do you anticipate getting audio from the drone as well?
I don't think you'd get audio from it. First of all, I think there's a small amount of noise that you get from the motors, and of course there's going to be some wind noise, but I wouldn't anticipate that you'd have the kind of microphone on a drone that would allow you to be able to hear things that were going on the ground. And remember, I would anticipate that most of these things are going to be flying, depending on the rules, 500 feet, 800 feet, in the air. You're not expecting to have this thing hovering over people at, say, 100 feet. But even if it were at 100 feet, imagine trying to mic something from 100 feet away with a machine that generates noise and with the sound of wind that's inevitably going to be part of a microphone at that altitude, even at 100 feet, miking somebody would be very problematic.
At least today, somebody will come up with something at some point.
Well, there are long range microphones that people can use, and parabolic reflectors have been around forever. People see them regularly in the crews that cover football games and that sort of thing. But even still, I don't think you're going to be able to pick up much that's meaningful right. in audio. But remember that radio these days, when you throw in social media, both Facebook websites and other streaming video and still pictures, radio is using pictures a whole lot more than it ever did before.
Yeah, what's been the reaction at the station?
I think the reaction's generally positive. I haven't heard anyone say, well, gosh, I think that's going to create problems. You know, think about all the instances that you have and where you can't see what it is that you need to describe. So I think as a tool for reporters, even on the ground, depending on how it ends up being used, you can imagine a reporter who's trying to report on, let's say, a civil disaster of some kind. You've got a burning building, you've got an earthquake that's happened, you've got a situation where there's a standoff of some kind. Even though I'm sure that the police are going to put restrictions on whether or not you could overfly, say, a standoff, if you simply had an eye that was in the sky up, 200 feet looking down on a situation, you'll be able to see things that frequently reporters can't. I don't know whether the general public is aware of this, but frequently you'll hear about some kind of situation involving the police and some kind of dispute, and reporters are kept back 2, 3, 5, even 10 blocks mm-hmm. away in an urban environment. That means you frequently don't have any direct view where you can put your eyeballs on what it is that's going on. The drones might actually correct that.
How do you think you'd like to use this for your show?
I don't know that I'll necessarily get the chance to use it for my show directly, although if our reporters have the ability to put a drone up over something, one of the first things I usually ask for if we have some situation going on is I ask for people to have eyes on the situation, because I'll get phone calls from people who say, oh, yeah, there's a big wreck going on, somewhere I drove past it, 15 minutes ago. Well, if you don't have your eyes on what's going on, then there's no way you can describe it. But I'm often looking for listeners to be able to do that. If I could sit in the studio and be able to dial up on a, on our website, a view of what our reporters are getting from a drone that's hovering over a situation. Let me give you a good one that was a very tough situation a few years ago. And a big either gasoline or oil tanker crashed on one of the major freeways, Interstate 84, that runs east-west on the east side of Portland. And when that thing crashed, it caught fire. And so here you have this canyon-like freeway situation, which people can imagine the freeways in their area, and you have a tanker that's on fire. You have traffic that's jammed up. You have people perhaps in jeopardy. Even having the ability to put a drone up hundreds of yards away, but up in the air looking down, would have given us a view of what was going on the ground that you can't match as a radio reporter. That gives me the ability to describe to people who are listening to my show what it is that I'm seeing from our eye in the sky.
Yeah, that's really helpful, and especially in those breaking news situations. I can even imagine it in like Ferguson or New York with the protests last week.
Absolutely, because, there are times where the only way to see where a crowd is going, if you're standing on the edge of the crowd, it's very difficult to tell where is this crowd going now. But if you're up in the air looking down on it, you can see that the crowd is starting to move east. And you can perhaps even give your listeners a warning. It appears that crowd of protesters is heading toward the 405 freeway, where protesters have been known to try to shut freeways down. If you can give your listeners a warning of what's about to come, that's very powerful. I could also imagine them. We know that we talked to a drone operator, commercial drone operator, out of Colorado after they had some intense flooding in Colorado. And the police were actually consulting with this man because they didn't know, because so many roads had been wiped out, that they didn't know what the situation was up those roads, because they couldn't get their people up those roads to be able to see. Is there a house that's cut off? Are there people sitting on a roof who are waving, looking for rescue? That's the kind of thing you would be able to get out of use of a drone as a news organization.
What are your concerns about the drone project, if any?
Well, I know that there's going to be a concern about invasion of privacy. And that's one we're going to have to be sensitive to. When I've worked in both television and radio, and one of our rules was anything we can see from the street with our naked eye is fair game. So if somebody is standing on top of his roof with a rifle, and I can see that from or in his living room, in the living room window with a rifle, and I can see him, I can describe that. We're going to be sensitive to a couple of things. One is, if somebody decides they want a nude sunbathe in their backyard, we have no business flying a drone over their backyard and capturing images of that and sharing it with people, because your backyard is private. The second concern, and it's an important one, is that in hostage situations where lives are at risk and police are trying to position themselves in a place where they're able to get an advantage over the bad guy, the last thing we want to do is share that information in a way that might give the advantage to the bad guy and a disadvantage to the police. So those are my two specific concerns. One, privacy. Two, not compromising police operations.
And as far as you know, have you received any reaction from the people of Portland with the announcement of the drone project?
Haven't heard anything. And, you know, it really broke late last week, but mostly in the industry trades, but we haven't heard from people yet. It's getting some general news coverage, so I may get some today.
All right. Well, Lars, I'm excited for you guys. I think this is a really groundbreaking. Certainly, you're trailblazing a path for a lot of news media outlets out there, so good luck with the whole project.
I'm kind of surprised that it's taken this long, but I'm glad that we're first, and it's exciting to be in that position.
All right. Thanks for joining us on the Radio Stuff Podcast.
You bet. Take care now.
As we record this, news is breaking that iHeartMedia is selling $400 million worth of radio towers, preparing for the time when they don't need them. Broadcaster will continue to use the towers in a lease agreement with Vertical Bridge after the deal closes sometime in the first quarter of 2015. Now, this seems like a lot of money, $400 million. $400 million! That could probably help balance their books. Probably not. As of September 2014, just a couple of months ago, iHeart was still more than $21 billion in debt, according to a financial analyst at Fitch Ratings, which explains why we keep hearing about layoffs from iHeart, and we'll likely see Bob Pittman dressed as Santa Claus outside a department store this month ringing a bell for iHeart salvation.
Educates, syncopates, radio communicates, radio, the sound of year-round pleasure.
All right, so I want to conclude Radio Stuff this week with a story out of London that demonstrates the power of radio, both good and bad. LBC, the talk station in London that's not the BBC, was discussing food banks this week, and a man named Mike called up.
Mike's in New Cross. Mike, what would you like to say?
I just phoned up to say that,
Now, there are a few things I want you to take note of. This is a random caller into the station, which we all know can be golden or disaster. Listen to how much room the host gives Mike to share his story and experience his emotions. He doesn't rush him. He doesn't dismiss him. He listens and prods when necessary. And consider how much trust Mike must have in the host to be so vulnerable on the air, to reveal so much personal detail.
I had a job and I lost my job for redundancy, and you try and survive, and then we lost that flat, and then sort of like the marriage broke apart, and I ended up living like a tiny room, and the money you get just don't cover what you need, and you have to go to food banks, and sometimes I'm living off of like a tin of spaghetti a day or a tin of beans. So there are people out there that really are really are struggling. It's not fun for these people to sit there and say, I'll go and get a job. I'm out every day looking and searching, and you know, you're trying to do it, but you're angry, you can't do it, and it gets harder and harder. I'm sorry.
That's all right, Mike. Take your time.
This host is James O'Brien.
It really is tough out there. And to say that the government don't help you, they don't help you at all when they make it as hard as possible. And you just go and you sit there and you don't know what you're going to do. And you don't know, you've got nothing to eat. And you walk to the cupboard 10, 50 times a day and there's nothing there. It don't change. So don't tell me that I'm taking a piss because I ain't.
You know I'm not telling you that, but you know there are plenty of people queuing up to suggest that you might be. Well, what they would argue is that you've made bad decisions, you have spent money on things you shouldn't have spent it on, that you have perhaps been a little, I don't know what the word would be, foolish in your choices and expenditures, wouldn't they?
Well, you know, when you don't, you start off with nothing. When you're getting nothing, you can't do anything with nothing.
If someone was listening to you now and feeling sympathy, but a sympathy, if you will, tinged with curiosity.
I don't want people's sympathy.
Well, you can't help that. You can't help it. You'll get it. I've made no mistakes in my life.
I've tried to do it right. You know, I've tried to do everything right as they tell you to. And I thought redundancy and the pressure that put on us to marriage and everything else. And now you find yourself when you once had a job and now you're sitting there and you're out every day looking for just enough money just to buy you a dinner. You know, you're just trying to get by. And I go, Dave, sometimes I can't eat. I don't eat.
People think that the benefit system in this country is adequate, so they will be a little confused.
It's not. It's nowhere near. I've got a tiny little radio, and that's what I've got. My batteries for that is an extravagance for me.
Is there light at the end of the tunnel?
These people think we're out there, just taking. No, we're not. Some of us are proud. Some of us are proud and trying to get by, but sometimes you have to go to a food bank. You have to. You don't have any choice. But sometimes, because you haven't registered, they have to turn you away. I mean, I found myself looking in bins and, you know, how bad's that? And you're around the back of supermarkets taking stuff that they've thrown away. Yes, I've done that. I have done that. And I'm not proud to admit it either. So don't tell me that what they're giving us is adequate. And we've got this and got that. These people in the papers that have been spending £1,500 on benefits. I don't know how they do it. It must be the story has to be made up. It's so fantastic. It has to be made up.
Why do you think people are so keen to believe it and not to believe men like you?
I have no idea. Society baffles me. It really does. The way they react. We spend millions on they phone in millions of X Factor, yet there's people starving. Just 50 pence. You know, they'd rather pay £3 on the X to get through to X Factor. What is going on?
What are you doing for Christmas, Mike?
What am I doing for Christmas? I'm not doing nothing. I can't do nothing for Christmas. I will just shut the door and listen to the radio.
Now, the conversation continued for over 6 minutes, and at one point, O'Brien can't help himself but be human.
I don't know if I'm allowed to do this. Can I send you a few quid? Would you mind?
Absolutely not.
Well, I knew you were going to say that.
It's not charity.
It's there but for the grace of God, mate.
No, I will not take money off of no one. I don't care. Not like that. I'll earn it by
it. Stay on the line, will you? And give us your details. This is, some days it doesn't feel like a bloody job, this. It really doesn't. Mike, thank you. And take care.
The station did take Mike's information and moved on with the show. Meanwhile, overnight, the audio went viral. So the story has legs. The station didn't kill it. So the next day, James O'Brien dialed up Mike.
Flipping out, Mike. You set fire to the radio yesterday.
I didn't mean to. It was just a case of I was listening to what people were saying and I was just so angry that they don't know what it's like. They don't know what
well,
it's
they
like
do now.
To go hungry.
They do now. And I've got to tell you, I don't know if you're aware of it, but the recording of our conversation yesterday has been published everywhere from The Independent in this country to the New York Daily News, and it's even, I've just heard from an Australian former colleague, being played out on the radio over there. So just in terms of what you set out to do when you rang me yesterday, people get it now. They understand better the plight that you find yourself in.
So at this point, the host and presumably the station have consciously decided they're going to help this guy.
Well, you're not on your own anymore, mate. I mean that. And that's not just words, all right? Two things we need to establish. The first is, I offered you some help yesterday personally. You didn't want it. I respect and understand that.
No, I was quite insulted by that, to be honest.
I know you were. I know you were. I know you were, but I'm not going to apologize because that's what happens when you're feeling emotional, my friend, and I was made to feel emotional by you. And I have to tell you that a few hundred people have been in touch with similar offers. I just want to clarify that you're still not interested.
No, I will not take charity. If they want to give it to food banks, please do, because there's so many people out there.
Right, second thing, I want to get you, I want to get you some work.
I'd break your arm for the job. I'd do anything. I don't care. I'd do anything.
And then, for us, radio folk, the kicker came in.
Right, what were you doing before? What were you made redundant from?
I worked for a broadcasting company.
Good grief.
Oh, to the heart. There it is.
I've got a degree in broadcasting communications.
Well,
you know,
it's
about as good as a chocolate teapot, I guess. But,
well, that's true.
You know, I have a degree.
Now, when I first listened to these clips, about 20 minutes worth in all, I was crying in my studio, feeling horribly. Not just for Mike, but for just sort of the casual way I and others talk about riffs and layoffs. And I guess we all assume there's another job out there. There's another job in broadcasting, whether in the U.S. or the U.K. or elsewhere. But increasingly, that's not the case. We need to help each other. We need to look out for our friends in this business. The next day, Mike was back on the air with a surprise offer.
On the back of that, I would really like to give you the opportunity to apply for a team member role here at Pret A Manger. And I'd like to invite you down to our recruitment centre, which is on platform 2 at Victoria Railway Station, on Friday at 2 o'clock to have the opportunity to fill in an application form.
I'm speechless because this is the first offer I've had. I mean, I have done over 2,500, about 2,600 applications, and I've had 27 replies out of all them, and I will rip your arm off for a chance to show you what I can do.
You don't need to do that. I've got some very nice wraps.
Definitely no need to do that, Mike. I'm quite attached to my arm, literally, but it would be an absolute pleasure to give you the opportunity.
I promise you, I will not let you down.
Well, I don't want you to make any promises, because if this isn't right and this doesn't work out, we've got other people being in touch as well, but Michael's been working harder than he's ever worked in his life dealing with all the kind-hearted people like David and other. I mean, we even heard, Mike, from the wardrobe master at the Palace Theatre, who's currently working on The Commitments. What's your stitching like?
Excellent. All my own repairs.
Well, blimey. Well, that might be on the agenda as well, but we'll hook you up with David or his colleagues over at Pret A Manger, and we'll catch up with you after that's happened. But people aren't doing this out of charity. They're not doing this out of anything other than simple human kindness, because your simple human kindness has touched them. So best
absolutely.
Of luck.
Absolutely. It's absolutely the right thing to do.
Gang, this is must-listen radio. You should. There's three clips in all. You should look them up. You know, think about from a listener perspective even. I mean, from human perspective, obviously. But now the listeners are hooked. Is this guy going to get a job? I want to know. I want to know how it ends. Tune in tomorrow or next week to find out. You know, radio stations, regardless of the format, need to find ways like this to create storylines from day to day to day to engage listeners, hook them in, keep them coming back. And sometimes it can be as simple as listening to your listeners and opening your heart, being a facilitator or even a catalyst for change in just one person's life. Because you affect one person, and everybody in the community listening feels it. So the power of our industry is mighty. You know, we can raise millions of dollars for charity, and we can help find people jobs. We can also be cruel and cold and heartless in pursuit of profitability. We need to be careful. We need to choose wisely. That's Radio Stuff this week. Email me at radiostuffpodcast@gmail.com and be sure to read my blog at larrygifford.com. And think of me if you're in need of a radio consultant or talent coach. There's a special deal going on right now till the end of the year. Go to larrygifford.com for talent, 3 sessions, $250, and we'll take care of those in January, February, and March. So sign up now or tell your friends about it. Just another great way to get refreshed or rejuvenated for the new year. Check it out at larrygifford.com. And find more radio stuff at radiostuffpodcast.com. Have fun, be creative, support each other, and share your radio stuff.